There's a paper from earlier this month that deserves more attention than 9HN comments might suggest. Gukov's post at gukov.dev covers a proof that magic hexagons exist at every order. For listeners who need the setup, a magic hexagon is a hexagonal grid where you fill in consecutive integers and every row sums to the same number, analogous to a magic square, but hexagonal. For decades, it was believed that only one magic hexagon of any substance existed, Order 3, discovered and proven unique by Trigg in 1964. The assumption hardened into consensus that larger magic hexagons simply couldn't be constructed.
And this paper proves that wrong.
It proves that with a slightly generalized definition, specifically allowing the constraint on which set of integers you use to be relaxed, magic hexagons of every order exist, and there's a constructive method to produce them. Now, mathematicians will debate whether the generalization is the right definition, but the constructive proof is clean. It's the kind of result that feels surprising, precisely because the old result had been sitting unchallenged for 60 years. The HN discussion is small, but the commenters who engage are sharp. There's a thread about whether this connects to known results in combinatorics and number theory that's worth reading.
TheoremDB is adjacent to this conversation. It's a public workspace for machine mathematics that launched recently. The idea is to give formal proof systems a shared, searchable repository. As more mathematical results get formalized in systems like Lean or Coq, having a centralized database where those proofs are queryable becomes genuinely useful. It's a long horizon infrastructure project, but the HN community seems enthusiastic about the concept.
The melatonin study is a different kind of science story, but it's generating the most comment volume of any health topic today. 118 comments on a 2023 paper that resurfaced this week. The abstract, published in the journal Sleep, found that melatonin, taken the night before, impairs morning cognitive performance in healthy young adults. The effect sizes are described as statistically significant, and the study controlled for sleep duration and quality.
I'll be honest, I've been a melatonin user for travel, and I'm now reading those 118 comments very carefully.
Most people are. The HN thread is doing what HN does well. Researchers and physicians pushing back on methodology. People noting that healthy young adults in a lab setting is a narrow population, and a substantial contingent pointing out that if melatonin actually helps you sleep, the cognitive cost of bad sleep might outweigh the next morning impairment from the supplement. It's a genuinely nuanced debate. The dosing question also comes up repeatedly. Most commercial melatonin tablets are 5 to 10 milligrams, which is dramatically higher than what the body produces naturally. And some researchers argue that physiological doses around 0.3 milligrams behave very differently.
The "should you crack your knuckles" story is lighter, but it's got 73 comments, which tells you something about topics that touch daily habits. The BBC Future piece reviews the actual evidence, and the conclusion is roughly, no compelling evidence of long-term joint damage, the sound is gas bubbles in synovial fluid collapsing, and the famous self-experimenter Donald Unger cracked the knuckles of only one hand for 60 years and found no difference. The HN crowd mostly uses this as an opportunity to share personal anecdotes and argue about placebo effects.
The Batman Effect paper from Nature is worth a few minutes too. The 2025 study looks at what they call the Batman Effect, the finding that adopting a third-person perspective, including imagining yourself as a competent character like Batman, improves persistence on difficult tasks. This particular paper extends that to pro-social behavior. Unexpected events that break routine can trigger people to step into a kind of helper identity. The mechanism is about psychological distancing, allowing people to override their default self-interested responses.
It connects interestingly to game difficulty curve design, which is another topic on the board today. The davtech.co.uk post on difficulty curves in games is a practitioner's guide to how developers calibrate challenge to maintain engagement without inducing frustration. The argument is that difficulty should be responsive, not just linear, because players who feel appropriately challenged enter a state that behavioral researchers would recognize as related to what the Batman paper is describing. You perform better when you have a slightly externalized identity of competence.
The Long Bets story from 2011 is a wonderful metacognitive moment. The post is literally a prediction made in 2011 that its original URL will no longer be functional in 11 years, which means by 2022. It's now 2026 and the post is still live, which means the prediction lost. Longbets.org is a platform for publicly accountable long horizon predictions. And the HN thread uses this specific case as a jumping off point for a broader conversation about link rot, digital permanence, and whether the web's infrastructure for preserving content has improved since 2011. The answer, most commenters agree, is partially. The Internet Archive is more robust, but the underlying problem of URL instability hasn't been solved architecturally.